Welcome to the Travel Like a Boss podcast, where we interview location-independent entrepreneurs that travel the world like a boss by being their own boss. Here's your host, Johnny FD.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny and welcome to episode 259 of the Travel Like a Boss podcast. I am here with an old friend, Will Chope, also known as Will the Kill Chope, professional MMA fighter. Welcome to the show.
Yo, thanks for having me, bro. Like you said, it's been years since we've seen each other or we've talked, man. It's good to catch up.
Yeah, it's literally been how many years? More than 10 years?
We last saw each other probably 9 years ago in 2011 when we were neighbors in the bamboo huts.
Yeah, that was crazy, man. That was really crazy. And what's funny is before we get into all that, because there's so much I want to catch up with you on you know, kind of what you've been up to these last, you know, 9 years, your professional fighting career, MMA career, and also what you were kind of up to now that you're in quarantine in Korea. But first, I want to apologize for being 30 minutes late. This being in Sri Lanka is like being in Sri Lanka where I am now is like being in Thailand 10 years ago, like before infrastructure. I was trying to rent a bike. And, you know, nowadays in any kind of like a westernized country, you can just go to a bike shop and rent it. It's not a big problem. Here, there's no bike shops. You have to just call around or ask around and then meet some random guy. He came, you know, 30 minutes late and then he gives me the bike and he's like, I don't have a way to get home. Can you drive me home? And I'm like, I have a call in like 15 minutes. He's like, oh, no, it's just down the street, And he's like, I was going to drive him. And he's like, no, I'll drive. So, because I know where it is, which makes sense. So we drive way past, you know, the 15 minute mark. So we're driving like 20 minutes away. And then he gives me the bike, takes the money. And then I realized there is no gas in the bike at all, like zero. Like he like timed it. So there's like no gas at all. So then I get in the bike and I'm driving and I feel it like sputtering, like the engine, you know, like it's like barely going. And then, so I'm like, okay. So I drive 10 minutes in the wrong direction to go fill up the bike with gas, you know, spend, you know, 700, whatever fees, however many dollars to fill it up. And then I'm driving back home and I realize this engine is a crap. It like barely like goes, like unless you're flowing it the whole time and just like sputters. So now I'm like an hour late. Yeah. Oh my God. Like, doesn't this remind you of what Thailand was like 10, 20 years ago?
And there's still some parts of Thailand kind of like that still. And I've been to Myanmar as well. Like, yo, I know how it is, bro.
Oh my God. But okay. That's all good. My bad.
I got plenty of time. Hey, there's a slight delay, just so you know. Uh-huh. There's like a 1 second delay, so if we do cut each other off, it's my bad.
Okay, yeah, no worries. So tell me, where are you now exactly?
All right, I'm in South Korea. I'm about 1 hour south of Seoul. I'm in a quarantine hotel. It's a Ramada hotel. So it's actually a nice hotel, but the government have taken it over and they're using it as a quarantine hotel for tourists because Korea is one of the few and almost only places in Asia right now that are accepting tourists on like stamps that I don't need a visa to come. So I decided to come here, but you have to go through this 2 week quarantine and it cost me $1,500. So it's a bit expensive. But I wanted to get back to Asia and it just seemed like I knew I could fight here and it seemed like a good idea.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool that you have, two fights signed up in Korea?
Yeah, I'm going to fight November. Literally, I get out of quarantine on the 12th and then my weigh-ins are on the 13th and then I fight the 14th in November. And then I'm most likely going to fight again on December 18th as well. So I know I have a lot of contacts in Korea. I fought here 3 times before, so I have a small name here. Or a little bit of a name, and I'm the only foreign fighter based here right now. So there's still shows going on because Korea is completely normal, and there's shows going on, but there's no foreign fighters here, and nobody wants to fly in because they have to do the 2 week quarantine. But I was up for the challenge.
Oh man, that sounds awesome. You know, like it's funny because even though the world is locked down and there's every excuse in the world, you know, why, you know, people don't have jobs. I think that when you think outside of the box, you know, we can really, you know, have this kind of world to ourselves. Like, for example, I'm one of the only foreign travel bloggers in Sri Lanka right now. So it's gotten me so many opportunities. We got a sponsorship from the, you know, the tourism board. We got these like, you know, free stays at hotels because we're literally the only ones here. And for you, you're the only foreign fighter and it's going to open up so many doors for you.
Yeah, because I even got a coaching job lined up as well. So I know I'm going to be able to make money, have be on a salary for the next 3 or 4 months. I'm going to try to stay here the whole 90 days. And hopefully after New Year's, Japan opens up or somewhere else opens up, and then I can do a quick visa run and come right back because I got a good opportunity here and I kind of want to take advantage of it. And Korea is a really safe place right now. The whole country has a little over 1,000 active coronavirus cases currently. For a country of like 50 million people, like that's unheard of anywhere else in the world. It's like, it's probably one of the safest countries to be in right now.
Yeah. It's super smart. I mean, for anyone who's, you know, in the US complaining about the politics and the election, you know, stress of being locked down, there's options. There's Mexico with no quarantine at all. And then there's places like South Korea where, you know, yeah, 14 days sucks, but it'll be worth it, right?
Yeah, because everything's normal in Korea outside. Like the quarantine strict, that's real strict about it. But everything else is normal. You just have to wear a mask in public, but everything's open. They're still doing shows. You know, there's still nightlife. Their restaurants are open. So yeah, it was like, it's I'm looking forward to it, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay. But it must be so hard to try to stay in shape in a hotel room, like no training partners, no space to work out. Like, what are you doing?
So what's funny is I'm in a little, there's two beds in my hotel room. There's a queen size bed and a small little single bed. I literally put this queen size bed up on the wall and I have a little bit more extra room. And I just been doing like body weight circuits, like really like, man, I think yesterday I did like 200 burpees, like 300 different push-up variations, a bunch of abs, hard shadow boxing. Like I'm still getting my heart rate up and staying in shape. It fucking sucks. It's frustrating, but yeah, I just got to do what I got to do. I got to make sure I'm still in shape. I came to Korea in pretty good shape. I just got to maintain it and get ready for this fight. So yeah.
Yeah. If anything, yeah, I've been watching your YouTube videos. If anything, turn that queen size bed the opposite direction and just destroy that like a bag.
Oh, I did. That's what I did. And then I kind of have like, but one of my friends said that as well. And I was like, oh, that's a good idea. So I put the soft side on towards me up on the wall. And then, so I kind of have it like a little punchy bag sort of, and it's good because I'm the last in the hall of the hotel. I'm the last one. So the wall it's up, like it won't make no noise for the person in the next room. Thank God.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine like what they would be thinking. You're like, ah, boom, 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 destroying the wall, destroying the room, thinking like, oh man, this guy is going insane in the quarantine.
Man, it's funny though, because like we're only allowed to open our hotel room door 4 times per day. Like I said, 3 times to get our food and then 1 time to put our trash out at the end of the day. And but every now and then there's a public announcement and they tell people like to go back in the room. Like you're not supposed to go in the hallway of the hotel. You're not like, I watched your last podcast where you're talking to people in the quarantine facility, the government one, and how people were all interacting with each other. Like you can't do that here at all. Korea is very strict and they have cameras and they'll be, and if you do something, they'll announce it on the PA system. And if you don't listen, they'll come and get you. Wow. So,
yeah. Yeah, that sucks. I had a friend, Aliona, who did quarantine in Russia and she said it was awesome. The whole floor got to interact with each other. So basically whoever was on the plane together anyways, they get a whole floor together because they figure that, you know, if you know you were to get it, you would have got it from the people on the plane or on the bus anyway. And the risk is if you do catch it, the whole floor is quarantined for another 14 days, which sucks. Your case, it's probably better to be alone. I mean, some people just chose to stay alone anyways, but at least that was an option for, you know, where they can at least like interact with each other.
Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. Well, because here in Korea, they do test us the very first day. As long as you like pass your test, pretty nice if the quarantine was shorter, if it was only 7 days, but they don't do that. They test you on the first day. They're going to test me again on my 10th day. And then they'll test me on my final day. And as long as I pass all the tests, I'll get out. And then,
yeah, nice.
Yeah. It's quite strict, but I kind of understand it. I can't argue with them because I'm in their country and you can't argue with the results here, unfortunately. Yeah,
yeah.
So
yeah, definitely.
working, you know,
weight wise, are you going to have to try to make weight and cut weight during?
Oh, Okay, so normally I would fight at 70 kilos or 155 pounds, but this fight I'm fighting at welterweight, which is 77 or 170 pounds. So I only have to cut about 5 kilos, which is really easy. I can do that actually quite fast in the sauna. So I'll get on the 12th, and most likely the morning of the 13th, I'll have to go to the sauna, okay. Which is going to be – I'm not too worried about it. I'm pretty in good shape right now, and, like, I'm really lean. I just posted a super pissed off video after I ate my food and I worked out, and I'm, like, I'm in good shape right now, so I'm not too stressed.
Yeah. Yeah, if anything, like, this almost reminds me of, like, the like, prison fights. So, like, when someone's been locked up in jail, then they let them out saying, like, if you, you know, like, you can come out just to fight, and then if you win, you get to stay out.
Well, yeah, like, it's kind of funny because, like, all right, I'll, people probably would, if they walk in my hotel room, so they'll think I'm a psychopath because I have it all dark. I'll just listen to music, and I'll kind of just be rocking and zoning out and, like, almost like it's like my version of meditating and just, like, thinking about the fights, thinking about my goals, thinking about things to do, and just trying to be in the right mind. And so, but it kind of looks kind of creepy because it's all dark. I'm like, but what, I mean, like, I don't know. It's me focused, and I'm super ready for the fight. And just, I'm ready. I have a lot of goals while I'm in Korea, and I just want to, so yeah. And to be honest, if the food wasn't so bad, this would be kind of like a little mini vacation. My body's healing up nicely. I'm getting good training. I'm getting good stretching. I'm doing, like, yoga. I never do yoga. Mm-hmm. And, like, I feel good right now. But food is so bad. It's kind of whole process kind of miserable now.
That sucks. Is there any way you can order food, like pay for extra for anything?
Yeah. So people keep asking me that. And, like, we can't get delivery. And because the government took over the hotel, they said it's not a hotel. There are no amenities. There is no room service. You can't make special requests because if we make a special request for you, we have to do it for other people. And it's like, so there's literally nothing I can do. I just get my 3 meals a day and I have to accept it. I should have packed a bunch of extra food, which I didn't. I was being cheap. I was being like, I was, because one thing about Korean quarantine is it costs between about $1,300 to $2,000. It depends which hotel you go to. And it's really random which hotel you're going to go to. You don't know which one you're going to go to. And you can't request. I got put in a Ramada. Some people get put in a Grand Hyatt. I think some other people went to a Hilton. And there's another Ramada on another side of Seoul. So it's really different what kind of food you're going to get. Or, like, I watch other people's vlogs and their food looks way better than mine. But, yo, I don't know why the food's so bad here.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
I don't know. Maybe they know you're trying to make weight. So they just yeah, purposely right? put crappy food.
And for sure, bro.
So this podcast is all about people who find, like, an alternative way to travel, right? Some people do it teaching English online. Some people do it, you know, as an entrepreneur working online or freelance remotely or starting their business. You've done it in a completely different way. You've basically traveled the world as a professional fighter. How did you get started with that?
Well, like, I went to Thailand, maybe a year before I met you. I went for Thailand first in 2010. I was 19 years old. I remember you remember Cyrus Washington?
Yep. Black Dynamite.
Okay. It's Black Dynamite. If people want to Google him or YouTube him, but I remember seeing him on YouTube and watching his videos in Tiger Muay Thai. And I was like, this guy's badass. And I remember as a kid, I was like 18 and I messaged him on Facebook and he responded. And I was like stoked, you know, I was like, oh my God, this guy's talking back to me. He's actually responding to my questions. And I was asking, what's it like fighting there? Is it possible to make a living, blah, blah, blah. And Cyrus is like a real gangster, you know? Cyrus is like, yo, if you want to make a living fighting, he's like, it's easy. All you got to do is show up and you got to fight. You got to train your ass off and you got to fight. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's sure. That sounds easy. No problem. But one thing you'll realize, like, me and you both know this. People go to Thailand and they say they're going to fight. They're going to fight. They're going to fight. And the first time they go to the nightlife, to go to the red light district, or they drink with a bunch of bar girls, you'll never see them again training. And people just don't, you know, people just don't fight. Or they say they're going to fight, They might have one fight, then they don't fight again for like 3 months. And I never did that. I saw the Thais and I saw how they fought. Like, Thais fight almost on a weekly basis. However much their body can take, they'll fight, you know, they got to make money. And I was like, okay, I just got to do this. I had no saving. I didn't have any money. So I was like, if I don't fight, I don't eat. So that's what I did, bro. I just came out, trained. I got a fight within my first month of staying. And I just kept grinding. I really, really sucked back in the day. Even when you met me, I was like really not very good. I was really tall, skeletor looking dude. I looked really awkward. I wasn't very good. But after time, I put my whole life into it. I've been training full time, took a lot of fights. I got the experience I needed, and I really started developing, and I got better, and everything kind of started coming into place and working out. I think when I last saw you, I moved to the Philippines. I left Thailand and went to the Philippines. I was supposed to come back, and I didn't. And but after that, after I moved to the Philippines, everything started coming together, and I started winning more fights, and I started, my name started growing. I made it to the UFC in the January 2014. I got to the UFC. I got out of the UFC, of course, as well. But I mean, but I've just always racked up fights, whether it's mixed martial arts, kickboxing, Muay Thai, boxing, Sanda, Lethwei, what, bare knuckle. Like any fight, I'm down to fight as long as I get paid. And I just don't want to, I'm too lazy. I don't want to work that 9 to 5. I don't want to work some job I hate. I was just like, I'd rather do this than do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So for a lot of people listening, they might be thinking, you know, getting punched in the face sounds way harder than working a 9 to 5. But for certain personalities, being forced to sit, you know, in a cubicle for, you know, 9 hours a day is way worse than stepping into a ring or a cage and, you know, getting elbowed in the face.
Yeah, like I love fighting. I love training. Like I, you know, fighting is fun to me. Like it's a game. It's not violent to me. Like it can be violent. It's a game with consequences, of course. But I don't have any anger towards my opponents. I'm just there trying to, you know, just playing a game. I'm just trying to finish them, get maybe win by a judge's decision, get a knockout or get a submission, and then get my paycheck and go home. You know, and yeah, like support my family and you know, just do my thing. You know, so I don't know.
Man. I'm reminiscing about those days, like back in, I guess that was what, 2011 or 2010, yes. We were hanging out, living in Tiger Muay Thai, those bamboo huts that you mentioned earlier. So for those listening at home, I want you to imagine these huts were literally just like, you know, sheets of bamboo that they put up in less than a day. I remember it took like 8 hours to make these huts. I actually have a video of it on my YouTube channel. Just search for Johnny FD Bamboo Hut. And they were, how much did we pay a month for it? It was like, was it $150 or maybe it was even less?
I was lucky because Boyd, the owner of Phuket Top, sponsored me and let me stay there for free. But I believe the rent was only $100 a month. It was $100 a month. We had Wi-Fi, but it was just a little tatami mat with a mosquito net. We had a mosquito net and we had one fan and that was it. And me, you, and Malik, you remember Malik Watson? We were the only foreigners that stayed in the bamboo huts. The other people that lived in the bamboo huts were the Thai trainers. So we were the only foreigners to ever stay in those things.
Because we were broke.
Yo, we made shit happen, yo.
I still remember your daily meal. Okay, we had two meals a day. The first was a 30 baht buffet, which is $1. And we used to drive like 20 minutes to this place. But that was good food.
Yo, it was really good food. That guy was like a chef. It was awesome. I remember you made a video on that as well. It was great food.
Oh man, you know, I have no idea where that video is anymore. It's definitely not on my channel anymore because I was looking through them to reminisce. But yeah, I'm sure that dollar buffet is no longer there. But what he would do is he would do he would give you a plate of rice, and that funny thing was all the meat and vegetables, like the hot dishes, they were all you can eat. But the rice wasn't for some strange reason. So you get one plate of rice and then you can go and basically just take as many toppings as you want. And he would just buy whatever was, you know, fresh or cheap in the market. So it's always like really bony chicken because it was probably the cheapest meat there was and just whatever vegetables there were. But it was so tasty. Like the flavors and the spices and the herbs always came across. I mean, he was a chef.
Yeah, for a cruise before. A cruise, I think he was, right? Wasn't he a chef for a cruise before?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yo, those were the days, though. And then I used to have a tab at Tony's restaurant, which was just down the road from the gym. And I would rack up my tab because I would only eat once or twice a day because I didn't want to rack up my tab too much. And then I would rack up my tab. I would go fight Muay Thai, pay off my tab, and then I'd have no money again. And I was back to that same hustle. I did that for almost like 8 months, I remember. I did that for 8 months.
Yeah. I remember every day it was the same meal too. It was Kalpad Sapradalt, which is fried rice with pineapple.
Yeah, dude. And I remember I'd take the peanuts. They used to have a bunch of extra peanuts. And I would take those peanuts and like put it all over my rice just so I can get some extra protein and extra calories.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny? That was like my last year really truly be single. Be like before all, like, you know, I got my missus pregnant and got kids and stuff. And that was one of my best years ever. Like that was like one of the best, most years. Like I had the most fun. It was definitely crazy. So I always, even though I was so poor, I had such a great part of my journey and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah, me too. I honestly, I remember those days so well. And this is a reason why I wanted to catch up with you so bad. I was reminiscing, our lives have changed a lot since then. You've gotten married, you had a kid, you've grown your professional career as a fighter. You know, I went kind of the opposite direction. I got fat. I stopped training, but I started traveling and doing business stuff. But those days I'll always remember. Yeah.
Yeah. It was good. Yeah. It was good times. And it's cool. I just watched your channel. I do like how somebody was commenting on your account and your YouTube account. It's how much information you give out and stuff like that. Cause somebody was right. Like a lot of I watch a lot of other vloggers cause I just started a YouTube account. I've been saying I'd do it for years and I finally just started it. And I watch a lot of other vloggers and they just keep their information super private. They don't give you their YouTube analytics. They don't let you know how much money they make off their YouTube ads. They don't give you details on how to make other passive income. And cause a lot of times people just think are these just rich people traveling? What the hell's going on? And it's really cool how much information you provide and give out to people basically for free. And a lot of other vloggers and people are not.
Yeah. I've always thought of it as, I wish that somebody else was sharing this when I started, cause it would have saved me a lot of headache,
Yeah.
It's kind of my way to give back. And also, to be honest, it's more of a abundance mentality where I figure, if I'm going to be good, I'm going to do my thing. By me letting other people starting out know what, what's working, what I'm doing. I would have to suck for them to be able to catch up to me that quickly and negatively affect me, So it's almost like, imagine, you're, a good fighter. You can tell your opponent hey, I'm going to knock you out in the second round, and there's not that much he can do about it, especially if he's just starting out, like to be so afraid that someone's going to know your secret techniques, probably means you're not as sturdy, I guess, in your, financial or business or, fighting life as you should be.
Yeah, it's weird because as I've really been traveling the world and living this kind of lifestyle, and you meet other people that have escaped the 9-to-5 and living this alternative lifestyle, whatever you want to call it. But a lot of people are really narcissistic and they have huge egos, and it almost seems like they're very fake. They almost seem like they don't want to see other people succeed. And for me, that's crazy. I want to see other people do well. I want to see people I like and other, if just because somebody else is doing well doesn't mean I can't do well. It's really weird. It's like a selfish mentality I notice with other people. Not everybody, of course, but it's just one little thing I definitely have noticed with living this lifestyle.
Yeah, definitely. But, at the same time, we come across, people who 10 years later, we're still good friends with. It's I probably met, 10,000 travelers during during this last decade. But there's only a few I actually want to talk to you, and you're one of them, because you've always been a genuine guy. You've always been super open and honest. And even though we haven't spoken in so long, I've always kept tabs on you, kind of see what you've been up to. I've always cheering you.
Yeah, no, I was like I said, I was stoked to see you in Sri Lanka, because I was actually, before I was thinking about going to Korea, I was thinking about going to Sri Lanka, because there was a little window there where Sri Lanka was open and then they closed down. And I was like, oh, man, because I have a friend there that has an MMA gym, and it's called Soul of MMA, I believe. It's just outside Colombo. And I was thinking about going there. But then, like I said, unfortunately, coronavirus and craziness. But it's cool that you're there, because I definitely, that's one place I really want to go and see. A lot of people don't go there. It's people think I always say Sri Lanka is a nice version of India. And people think it's so third world, it's a nice India in a way.
Yeah. I mean, it's halfway, I would say it's halfway between India and Singapore, kind of infrastructure wise. It kind of reminds me of what Thailand or Bali was 10, 20. I would say that's probably the best way with Indian food and good, rice and curry.
Yeah. How long you been there now?
Man, I've been here for 9 months.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. But did they go back into another lockdown? Because didn't I just recently, you were on a lockdown or no?
Yeah. So, the first lockdown happened in March, April. I was here, I've been here since February, and the first month was awesome. Went around, traveled, surfed, all did all the stuff. And then it went on a hardcore lockdown. So for 2 months, we were not allowed to leave our building. I was in my room. Luckily we had this upstairs kind of deck where I can stretch and do stuff. I had a nice balcony, but once or twice a week, we were allowed to go to the grocery store, and that was it. You get half a day out, twice a week, and then the rest of the time we're stuck at home.
Yeah, because when I was in Thailand in February, I did, because I promote Thailand Fighting Championship, I'm not sure if you knew that. Me and my missus, we do TFC.
Oh, nice.
And we did our last show in February. And then I went to Singapore to guest coach for 2 months. And I was going to go back to Thailand and be with my kids for Songkran, which is Thai New Year. Uh-huh. And then, boom, at the end of March, Singapore went into like a really strict lockdown. Thailand closed their borders. A lot of other countries closed their borders. And I was thinking, I was like, oh, man, this can't last forever. It's going to, you know, in a couple of weeks, it'll be over. It's going to be okay. But then it lasted a whole month. And I started freaking out a little bit. And everything was closed. And like, Singapore's expensive. It's super strict. And very strict. I was living in a gym. I couldn't even hit the bag of the gym or do anything because I was like, if I did, I could get reported. The Singapore government released like a snitch app. Like if people are caught outside without a mask or people caught outside with somebody they don't live with, or if they're doing something they're not supposed to, they can report you to the government. Man. And I was just like, yo, this is getting crazy. The only time I could go outside was to get food and that was it. And I was just, okay. I was going nuts. I didn't know what was going to go happening. My fights were getting canceled left and right. I was supposed to fight in Italy in May. I was going to fight in Ethiopia. And then I was like, man, I think I got to go back to America. And yeah, so like right at the beginning of May, I flew back to America and I was in America for 5 months. And yeah, America was, it's crazy. Like Florida has almost 1 million cases of coronavirus, but yet everything is open, completely normal. No masks are mandatory, nothing. Like everything's like a free for all. No, and it was kind of cool in like one way, because I was like, Singapore was so strict and it was cool that everything was normal. There was the gyms open. I got a coaching job. But at the same time, I was like, man, I got to get out of here. And and I made sure I saw Korea was open. And I was like, man, I'm getting out of America before the end because there's going to be riots and craziness. And so I was like, all right, I'm out of here. So that's why I bounced.
Yeah, smart. I mean, I had considered going home as well. There was all, you know, kind of this little window of opportunity where I could have left, but I'm glad I stayed because, you know, now like new tourists can't come in, but everything was open for the last, you know, 3-4 months or so. We were traveling around, having a good time. It was just basically, you know, end of October, beginning of November, they locked down Colombo completely. But luckily I had saw kind of the writing on the wall. So a few weeks before that, I had left Colombo already. And decided, you know what, like, let me just get out of the hot zone because, you know, that's where the population is the most dense. So now we're just chilling, you know, now we're kind of in the jungle, but like, you know, 10 minute drive from the beach. We figure if we get locked down again, it's called Mitigama, which is near, it's the south. It's near a big town called, it's not really anywhere near anything. I'm literally living in the jungle. Like it feels like, you know, like in the Thai jungle, but they have this baller villa here that normally goes for like $250 or $300 a night. I'm getting the place for $500 for the whole month. $550.
Yeah, no tourism, so it's like, man. Yeah, yeah, that's take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's awesome. Like, it's crazy. Like, when the video comes out, probably in a few weeks, I'm gonna do a tour of it. Private pool, like, you know, big living room, like nice TV. And I'm just like, man, if I get locked down here for a month, it'll suck. But at least like I'll have all this to do. You know.
Yeah, and like, man, even though there's like lockdowns, like I really doubled down. I did stuff online. Like there's so many, for people listening, there's so many self-improvement ways. Like you can still, there's a lot of like, there's so much, the internet is such a great tool. Teach yourself another language, looking up stuff, planning trips. You know, you can always make the most of that. You can do your own training while you're alone and even in a hotel room or if you're at home and stuff. And if people are, as long as you have the right mindset, even a lockdown, you can make the most out of it and actually find some good situations. I know I've done a lot of networking online, even just being in quarantine for these 2 weeks. I got in contact with you again. I'm doing a lot of stuff online that I probably normally wouldn't have ever done if I was just living my life like normal. So it's, you can always make the most. Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was a quote going around during the beginning of lockdown that said something like, if you come out of this lockdown or this pandemic, you know, without, you know, new skills, like a side hustle or like in better shape or whatever, that means you never lack the time. You just lack discipline.
Yeah, 100%. That discipline's the real thing. Discipline, motivation, and like, and it's what's crazy in this world, you start realizing how people have those skills and people don't. There's a lot of people that just don't have, like, and that don't have that. And it's sad because even as a coach, I really want to see people become more disciplined, more account, hold themselves more accountable, because that's how you become better, you know?
Man. Yeah. So, okay. So in these last 9 years, so what, when, when we were hanging out, you already had a lot of fights. I mean, you know, you say that like your skill level wasn't where you wanted it to, but you were making progress because you were taking fights left and right. I mean, I think you had like 50 fights or something back then. Like, I don't remember.
Well, it's crazy. So that year in 2011, when I met you, that was the most time I ever fought in 1 year. I fought 20 times that year, which is like unheard of. Nobody fights that much in 1 year. Like, just so people, like, I know a lot of your viewers aren't fight fans. Most UFC fighters, for example, fight 3 times a year. Mm-hmm. Or even like pro boxers, they might fight twice a year. They take 2 big fights a year or something. So I was fighting that was the only way I was making money. And also in Thailand, you remember Bangla Stadium, Patong Stadium, we only got paid $200 to fight. So I had to make that $200 last. And I was like, well, if I fight again, I get another $200. So.
Oh man. I remember that experiment. I was thinking like, maybe I can live off of this. Cause I was like, you know, I'm paying $100 for my rent. You know, I'm only spending like $100 on food or $200 on food max. I'm not really, you know, I have my scooter rental that was cheap. No, I had bought the scooter and then I had sold it for the same price or something. And
yeah,
I think I took like 2 fights that month or something. And I was like, you know, I got $400 and then I had to give 100 of it to my coach. And I was like, man, I can't live off 3 a month. Like, is it doing this?
Nah, it's hard. It's hard, man. And like, that's why I always wanted to fight in China, fight kickboxing, fight MMA, because that MMA and kickboxing paid much more money than Muay Thai. Muay Thai, I only fight, even to this day, I only fight Muay Thai if I have no other choice. If I can't find any other fight, then I'll fight Muay Thai. But I'm always looking for those higher paying fights. You know what I mean? Like MMA pays much better. Like even here in Korea, I'm making a few $1,000s per fight. And the cost of living here in Korea is really cheap. Because I'm going to be coaching at a gym, I'm going to have a salary for my gym. I got accommodation covered. Most of these gyms, what's cool is a pro fighter too. Even if you're not even a coach, as long as you're a pro fighter, you can get sponsored at a lot of gyms and get discount housing at a lot of places around the world. And it really is kind of cool. It makes things cool to travel. But I am also looking for alternative sources of income, because fighting and coaching alone is, you know, especially because I've got 3 kids in Thailand. I got my wife. I don't want to be like, you know what I mean? I got a lot of expenses I got to cover. So like from coaching and fighting, it covers that. But I want to get into to get YouTube more, get into merchandise and things like that, so I can have these other little sources of income so I can prosper a little bit more.
Yeah. Definitely. I remember you had hooked me up at 13 Coins, the Muay Thai gym. And that was my kind of like my first time going to Bangkok. And I got, you know, free accommodation, free food, you know, just for like training there. I mean, granted, it was the worst accommodation I've ever had in my life. Yo, but it was awesome.
Bro. It was an attic. They literally put us in an attic above the gym. It was so crazy. I did not like Coins. That was terrible.
But you know, the food was actually really good, because I remember we would eat with owner, and like it was like the best like Chinese Thai food. And then, you know, is that place still around? Because that place had a lot of history.
I'm not sure, actually, to be honest. I haven't heard anything about it in a long time, because they don't have an MMA program there anymore. I think it's just Thai only, that the people that train there are Thais only now. I don't think it's open for tourism anymore. Like, I'm not sure exactly.
Do you remember BK, Brandon Kessler?
Yeah, he's back in America. We sort of keep in touch a little bit. Like, I see him on social media. We don't really talk a lot, but he's doing his thing. I helped him get his, like, a first fight in China. I remember that. Like, he's a big, huge dude, a huge fighter. And he was the coach at 13 Coins at that time. I remember that.
Yeah, so I remember that. So I actually hung out with him pretty recently, probably 1 year ago in Mexico. He was staying at a place down in Cabo, and I came and I was there for a week. So I went to go hang out. The homeboy turned vegan or something, and he's tiny now. He's like, I don't want to say he's like lanky madness like you, but he's thin now.
Yeah, it's crazy, because he was like 220 pounds and like 6 foot tall, like 5'10" or something. He's not like super super tall, but I remember him being really really big. But yeah, it's funny. He's like vegan now. I didn't know. I haven't really kept in touch with him a lot. So I just see him on social media here. That's funny. Yeah. He's vegan though. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. I wonder if that still lasted. I would bet 50-50 that he's eating meat again now. Actually, no, maybe he wasn't vegan. I think he was eating seafood, but not meat.
Okay. Yeah.
So what did you weigh back then?
So back in the day, I was like 150 to 155 pounds. I'm 6'4", guys. So just so you know, I was like bone skinny. What's crazy is like now, like right now here in the hotel, I'm a little over 180 pounds, but I can get up to 190 now. Like when I'm like, I don't have a fight right away, I'll be up to, I walk around like 190. But back in the day when I was eating two little Thai meals a day, I was only like 150, 155 pounds. And that was when I used to cut to featherweight. And I still have the record for the tallest featherweight in the history of MMA, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. Except for the one guy who died on the way to the weigh-in.
No. That guy was a amateur fighter. I think he was a bantamweight. I'm not sure, but he wasn't. For professional fighters, I'm the tallest 6'4" featherweight, 145, 66 kilogram fighter. That's out there, insane. Which is kind of funny.
I'm so glad you decided to move up a weight class or two, because that was unhealthy.
Yo, girls, well, no, it wasn't by choice, bro. I didn't like choose it. It's just like I was poor, bro.
Yeah.
I was just poor. Oh, man. I always blame my metabolism because I was always skinny, but yeah, it was just being poor, man.
Yeah, I mean, because you weren't rich growing up in the U.S. either, right?
No, like, man. I mean, I'll say it because it's on social media and other interviews. Like, man, I had like meth head parents, lower income. Like, man, we moved around all the time. Like my parents are really cool now. They're clean now. They're doing much better. They have good jobs now. They're doing, but growing up, I was like that. Like, we're just like living on that poverty line for America. And yeah, that's why I joined the military when I was like, when I graduated high school when I was 17, I joined the military. I was like, I got to escape this, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
Good move. And you know, and a big, big congrats and shout out to your parents for, you know, getting clean and getting their life in order, because it's hard for people to turn a leaf.
Yeah. Like, it was crazy. Cause when I was a teenager, I remember we moved from Northern California all the way to Florida, and they got clean like when I was in high school. And, but I mean, like, even though while they're getting clean, we're still like quite poor, you know. It wasn't like they got clean and all of a sudden we prospered, you know what I mean? But they're, like I said, they're doing much better now. They all live in Idaho now. My mom, they're homeowners, so that's kind of cool.
Wow.
And my dad is the one who got me into MMA. He went to high school with Ken Shamrock, and we used to watch MMA when I was a little kid. The reason I ended up becoming a fighter was because of my dad. So at the end of the day, he's like my best friend. I love him, and I'm always grateful for how much, like, even though we had a hard childhood, like, they made me who I am. Yeah. And I'm proud of that,
you know. And I'm proud that, like, so first off, I was super proud when I saw your first UFC fight. It was super unfair because you ended up fighting, for your very first fight, you fought, it was Max Holloway, who ended up being the world champion. So that was like, that was, you know, a hard matchup. Do you think that they knew how good he was, and they kind of just threw you in there? Or was it like, so, they didn't know who how good he would be either?
Man, actually, I don't know, man, because I was making my UFC debut. And Max Holloway already had 6 or 7 fights in the UFC. And actually, he just lost a decision to McGregor. Max Holloway is the only featherweight that didn't get knocked out by Conor McGregor. He lost a decision. And then after Max Holloway fought Conor McGregor, he fought me. And then I was supposed to fight Diego Brandão, this Brazilian guy in Brazil. I ended up getting cut from the UFC. But then Diego Brandão went to go fight Conor McGregor. So it's crazy. Like, back in 2014, I was like almost there, you know? I was in the mix, you know what I mean? And yeah, it was weird, though.
I was cheering you on so hard. Like, and then when you lost to Max, I was like, crap, you know, that sucks, you know, but he was so good. And then I saw you had a second chance, and I was so excited. And then I think I was watching that fight live, and they had cut you like just before, that day of.
Yeah, the day of the fight. And yeah, it was kind of crazy. I mean, people can go research on Google. There's a huge craziness, and that ended up getting sorted out now. I got a contact with the UFC now, and they don't care about, like, they said, as long as I'm on a win streak, they'll take me back. So that's one of my big, big things here in Korea, is I'm hoping I'm going to try to get 2 or 3 fights here in Korea while I'm here, try to win those fights. And if I win those 2 or 3 fights in a row, there's a very, very good chance I can go back to UFC. So,
oh man, I would love to see that, man. I would love to see that. Yeah, because that was all BS. So I'm glad it all sorted out.
Man. So what's next for you after COVID? Are you gonna stay in Sri Lanka a little bit longer, or where are you off to next?
Yeah, so I think I'm gonna be here for another few months because it's winter now. So all of Europe's basically going to be out of bounds. And then, you know, Thailand's closed. I would love to go back to Chiang Mai, but, you know, it's closed. So then I'm thinking, you know what, maybe I'll stay here for 3 more months and then kind of wait it out until spring and then go to Europe or something. Because I don't want to go back to the U.S. I wouldn't mind going to Mexico, but, you know, I'm afraid if I go to Mexico, then I'll, you know, and things get bad, then I'm stuck. I can't come back here.
Because there's a good chance during flu season, which is winter coming up, there's going to be like another second wave, which is already kind of happening. Like in Europe, so there's some place in Europe being locked down. There was just a lockdown in Malaysia. So yeah, smart move. Yeah. I'm going to try to stay in Korea as long as I can. I'm hoping after New Year's, like Thailand opens up or Japan opens up. Cause my uncle's in Japan. I got an uncle in Fukuoka. So it's so crazy right now. It's hard to plan anything because of COVID. So it's interesting times, my friend.
I would say enjoy Korea as long as you can. You know, I'm sure, you know, it sucks that you can't enjoy the, you know, before your weigh-in, but I'm sure that meal after your fight, you know, hopefully after your victory, is going to be some Korean barbecue.
Oh, right after weigh-ins, I'm going for Korean barbecue because I get out on the 12th, 13th is weigh-ins, and then right after my weigh-ins, I'm going to get some awesome Korean barbecue for sure.
Man. I love it. Man,
so people don't know. Yeah, if they want to follow me on Instagram at Asia Will the Kill, they can see I've been ranting about on my stories, like how terrible the food is. I made a YouTube video. I showed all the food I get served in one day. It's a real basic video, but still, like it's been really bad. It's been like jail food, but worse.
Yeah, it's like rice, kimchi, and pickles.
Yo, they gave they gave me a bunch of pickles and a bunch of jalapeno slices. Like, I understand having like 2 jalapeno slices to spice up your rice or meat or something, but they just give me a bunch of them. Like, I'm just going to eat them like broccoli or something. It's so weird, bro. It's so crazy.
If nothing else, like once you get out, you'll after the fight or after weigh-ins, you know, you're gonna be excited. All the Korean fried chicken,
Korean food is amazing. Ooh. You know, you're from California, right?
Yeah.
So you know, like Korean town, like you know how great Korean food is. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible, and I miss like good meat too, because like Sri Lanka has really good food, but it's not known for beef or like even like. Most like half of the areas we live in are Muslim areas. There's pork, so like in Colombo, the food is amazing, but the rest of the island, it's hard to find good food.
Yeah, pretty much just chicken, right? Would be the main thing, right?
That's how it is in Southeast Asia too.
Like unless you're gonna pay a lot of money for good beef, which is usually really expensive, like it's imported from Australia. It's really hard to get good beef, or even in like Muslim areas, getting pork. But that's one thing good about Japan and Korea. If you want good beef, like Japan and Korea have good food.
So I'm sure a lot of people are curious, like, let's say, you know, you get called for a fight in another country, you know, like whether it's China or, you know, Japan or something, who pays for like that ticket, the hotel rooms? Like, can you stay like a week, you know, 2 weeks before to train, or can you stay 2 weeks after to sightsee? Like, how does that work?
Okay. So like when I fight in Japan, when the last time I fought in Japan, when I fought for Pancras before, they'll pay for my education visa, or no, it's not education, sorry, it's an entertainment visa. So when I find Japan, I have to actually get a temporary work visa or entertainment visa. And since I'm making money there, right? And they'll pay for my flight, they'll pay for my hotel. I can request to stay up to 3 days after the fight, and they'll pay for the hotel for those days. But if I do want to stay longer, I have to pay that. I have to get my own accommodation, which I usually have done. Usually after Pancrase, I'll stay in Tokyo or Osaka for a few extra days. And I don't mind switching hotels, because it's just like, it's still a free plane ticket and I take advantage of it. And because back in the day, when like even when I knew you in 2011, 12, and 13, I would go and fight, and then the very next day, the promoters would always book a ticket for the very next day to fly back. And I never ever actually get to see the country I'm in. I would just go fight, and you can't really enjoy before the fight because you're cutting weight, or, you know, you're so worried about the fight. And then after the fight, it's like, okay, I'm leaving right away. And I started always wanting to stay longer. And like now that I have a little bit more of a name, the promoters do give me some leeway. They'll pay for an extra couple of days in a hotel and be pretty chill about that kind of stuff. And also I'm not making like tens of thousands of dollars like in the UFC. I'm only making a few thousand dollars per fight. And it varies. It depends which show I'm fighting in. Depends what style. It also depends on who the opponent is. If I'm fighting like a very famous local opponent, I'll get paid more money. If I'm fighting like a not very good guy, I'll get paid less. So all these variables take come into play, but I mean, I fight enough. I usually, well, not during COVID, but before COVID, I usually always try to fight at least one time. And that usually with my coaching salary, that makes me live an upper middle class lifestyle here in Asia. I live a pretty decent life in Asia.
Yeah, that's not, dude, not I'm like, happy to hear that.
Yeah.
And where are you living normally? Like, where are you living normally with your family?
So my family's in Thailand. So I go back and forth to Thailand all the time, but I'm always coaching either, like I've done coaching in Australia. I coach in Singapore a lot. I coach in Malaysia. Now here I'm going to coach in South Korea. So I bounce around a lot for coaching jobs because in Thailand, it's really hard to make money. And even getting a coaching job in Thailand, the money is really not very good. So I coach in other countries for a month or two. I fight and then boom, I go back to see my wife and kids. Or sometimes I fly them to like Malaysia or Singapore and they'll come. So it's kind of cool. My kids get to travel a lot. So they like that. And I just bounce around a lot. I really have a strong like partner. My missus is awesome because she really does hold down the fort when I'm gone. Like she really is supportive and she knows, like, I think deep down in her heart, she wishes I had a normal job, but she knows like this is what she signed up for. And so like, you know, I mean, it's been okay. And it always makes our relationship stronger when I do go back and see her and when I'm with her for a few weeks, like it's always really nice. So
that's dope, man. Like I'm happy you worked out. And also it was a nice, like, I'm sure it's, you know, a bit different now because you probably want to spend more time at home with the family because you got kids, but it was probably fun, like traveling around and be able to see the world, you know, free flights and someone else's dime, right?
Oh, 100%. Like the last year I went to Italy for the first time. I loved it. Like, I think Italy's my favorite country of all time. And I'm people don't know, like, I love Asia. I love Taiwan. Taiwan's always like a nice place in my heart because I used to live there and coach there as well. And I, for the longest time, Taiwan was like my favorite place. But then I went to Italy and I was like, oh, Italy's it. You know, like I didn't like Germany. I didn't like the UK. I like Southern Europe. I've been I still love traveling. Like even I got an offer to fight in Ethiopia and I was like, oh, I've never been to Africa. Cool. I'll go fight in Ethiopia. And the money wasn't good, but I was like, oh, it's a new country. I'm not going to spend any money to go there. So like I'm still making some money. So I was like, oh, well, I'm going to do that. You know?
So with Ethiopia, I'm assuming they'll pay for the flight. They'll pick you up from the airport. Like how does that work?
Oh yeah. They're going to cover everything. What I mean, money's not good. Is like that the fight purse is the super highest, but everything else is covered. Like anytime I travel and fight somewhere, all expenses are covered. The only thing I will say is here in Korea, when I came here on my own whim, I came here. So I'm paid for my own quarantine, for Korea. But when I go fight, when I get out of quarantine and I go to Cheongju where the fight is, they got a hotel already booked. They're going to give me a food allowance. They're going to give me they're going to pay me for the fight as well. And then I'll go down to Busan and I'll start training. I got a coaching job lined up. So it all works out.
You know? So out of all these countries that you fought in, like which ones kind of you think treat fighters the best, like accommodation, food wise, and which ones kind of just throw you in there?
Man, I got treated really, really well in Italy. To be honest, I get treated pretty well in a lot of places. China is the worst. Mainland China is by far the worst, hands down. Thailand is also is not very good, I would say, because it's just like you show up to the stadium, you fight, and that's it. Like the promoters don't care about you. They look at you like you're a chicken. Like you're this, like you're the same. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people don't know this about Thailand. They think Muay Thai is very spiritual, but Muay Thai is the only thing that people are legally allowed to gamble on in the country of Thailand. Mm-hmm. So a Muay Thai stadium is literally the casino of Thailand. And a lot of people think it's like Buddha, spiritual, but that's honestly, that's bullshit. Like this shit's about money and gambling. Mm-hmm. And so the promoters aren't always the best people in Thailand. So, but I do like fighting in Thailand because I can literally ride my scooter to the stadium. I fight, I fight, get my paid my money. Then I ride my scooter back home and it is what it is. But,
hope you can ride the scooter back home. That's always the goal.
I'm still going. I'm still driving home. But
I remember once in Chiang Mai, I rode my scooter like 20, like the gym was like 20, 30 minutes outside of the main city. So I rode my scooter there I had the fight. And then I like stumbled like three blocks away to the Zoe bar. And just got like smashed because I got so beat up that day, and I was like, "There's no way." I was like, "There's no way I'm driving this bike back." I was like, I can barely see out of my my eye. I'm so like, I'm just destroyed. I was like, someone throw me in a tuk-tuk.
There's times I've done that. I fought Bangla Stadium, and then I went to Bangla Road and got smashed after my fight. I ended up spending like half of my earnings, half of my fight purse on a party night. And then
oh
I'm like,
God.
I get a tuk-tuk drive. I remember I puked outside of a tuk-tuk. I was just like, puking outside the tuk-tuk window while they're driving. I just want to get back to my hut. Just want to get back home and chill.
Man, I remember I was reading this book. I was so excited because it was like the first, mainstream book out there. I think it was called like a fighter's journey. It was about some dude who went to Thailand to train for a fight. Have you ever read that or heard of it?
Yeah. I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
It was so good until I get to the point where I realized that like he never fought. He was training for the fight and then I forgot what happened, but he just like never had a fight.
Yeah. That guy made a lot of money off that book, but actually like that's like what those guys, I get really upset for. This guy's from Australia, England, Western countries. They'll come to Thailand, train for a couple weeks, they'll get a few pictures hitting pads with Thais, they'll go sleep with bar girls, go party, and then they go back to their home country and they change their name on Facebook to like Crew John or Crew Steve or Crew Alex, and all of a sudden they think they're a Muay Thai trainer and that they know Muay Thai and they trained in Thailand, and it's just like it's complete bullshit. And I get upset about it. Like that stuff irritates me a lot. But yeah, whatever. People are just going to do whatever they want to do.
So the funniest thing is, while training in Thailand, I had a good friend back in the day that was living in LA, and he was super, super into Muay Thai. So he was training at like one of the best Muay Thai gyms in California, or supposedly, one of the best. And then we would talk every time we would talk, he was so knowledgeable. Like he knew everything. He knew all the best fighters, he knew all the moves, he knew the history, he knew everything. And we kept talking, saying like, when I get back to LA, we're gonna spar, and I got back, and this is him, like, he had been training for at least what, like 2 or 3 years at this point. And I thought he was gonna be like a pro, because he was so knowledgeable about everything. We go in and I was like, dude, like this guy's like never sparred in his life. And I had realized that in Thailand, I didn't know any of the words, because the only thing I knew from the trainers were like, them yelling like lil 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 lil, like faster faster, or like yelling like just sounds at me. So I never knew like what I was doing, why I was doing it. But like from day one, we were sparring.
Yeah, you're sparring in Thailand. You're clinching. You're always hitting pads. That's one thing about America too. When you go to these Muay Thai gyms or MMA gyms, you don't ever hit pads really. Hitting pads is like a privilege that you have to get earned from your coach, or you have to pay for personal training, which is really expensive in the Western countries. But in Thailand, you go out, you're always getting good pad work, you're always clinching, you're always sparring, you're always doing good technique. And you had fights, I had fights, and you get like one fight, I feel like is like, I feel like that's like 2 months of training, months, like experience you get from one fight would be like this equivalent of 2 or 3 months of hard training. So but that's the thing with MMA now. It's like, you know how there's like these hardcore NFL fans or NBA fans that know stats, know the player's name, know their like which high school they went to, which college they went to. So that's how the MMA is getting so big, and even Muay Thai is getting so big. You're getting these crazy fans like that know all the fighters' names. They know their stats. They know their records. They know this and that. And before, like back in the day, if you knew that stuff, that means like you must have been a fighter. Like you must like know some shit if you know of this much about the fighters. But it's just like the sport is becoming so mainstream now where it's attracting these hardcore fans, and these hardcore fans are little keyboard warriors, and they pretend like they know what the fuck they're talking about. And they kind of do. They are hardcore fans, but they're not, that doesn't mean that they're good in the gym. That doesn't mean they're actually a fighter. It just means they just watch a lot of videos and know a lot of stats.
Well, the funniest thing about watching videos is I remember watching like those like backyard brawls back in the day, and then or like when Kimbo Slice fought in the UFC, and I was so inexperienced, and this is before I had any pro fights or any fights at all. Like, I think I had just got to Target Muay Thai and I just started training. I remember saying, one time, like saying like, oh man, this Kimbo Slice guy sucks, like I can beat him. And one of the other guys there looked at me and was like, no, you can't. Just like straight up called me out on it. And I was like, no, look how slow they are. Look how slow they're punching. Like they're so tired. This guy was like, look, Johnny, like, you've never had a fight before. Like you have no idea what it's like to be in that ring. And it wasn't until I had my first fight when I really realized, oh my God, it is the fighting is the most tiring thing in the world.
And Kimbo Slice is a big monster. Like, I wouldn't want to fight that guy.
Yeah. I mean, like, maybe if he was already, like, exhausted from fighting someone else for 7 minutes and then he threw me in fresh, maybe I would have a chance at beating him, you know? But, like, if we were both fresh, you know, there's no way I could survive those 3 minutes, you know, until he gets tired.
Man, I remember watching back in the day when I was in high school, him fighting for, like, 30 minutes. It was, like, the one street fight he lost. He lost to this other MMA fighter. And it was like a 30-minute fight that was ridiculous. I was just like, yeah, fuck that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But, man, that's dope. You're in Sri Lanka, man. I'm looking forward to going. If you are in Colombo again and you're ever wanting to train or something, or let me know. And my friend there, he has a gym. I think they'd be stoked. He always shares my stuff on his Instagram and stuff too. So I keep on talking. I was like, bro, I was supposed to go. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I went to Korea. I wanted to go to Sri Lanka, but they closed the border. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But, that'd be dope. Actually, so I went to this I went to this martial arts gym called Annapurna. It's more like it's not MMA or anything. It's more like their version of What was that one martial arts with the swords and everything? Is that like wushu? It's like their version of like wushu, probably.
I call it it's salat probably, because salat is like Southeast Asian kung fu. Like in China we call it kung fu or wushu, but in like Southeast Asia they do have like the salat with those like cool like crisp daggers with you know what I'm talking like Sri Lanka salat is really big, and so is in Indonesia and Malaysia as well. Salat, it's probably salat.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe they're related. This one's definitely called Annapurna. It's like this, you know, ancient kind of lost martial art. But I went kind of just to film and make a cool video about it. And then, you know, like I like, you know, did the warm up where literally they're just kind of like running through the jungle, doing some pull ups and random stuff. Man, I was so exhausted, dude. Like you can hear me breathing heavy in the video, like trying to hold the camera, like just to film other dudes. A big part of me wishes I never would have stopped, and so I never would have got out of shape. But now, like, you know, being 39, I look, you know, every time I watch UFC and I have like a itch to, like, you know, I was like, maybe I can do one fight, you know, like maybe I can train and get back in shape, do one fight. I look at myself in the mirror, I'm like, nah, man, like I'm gonna go and I'm gonna regret it if I do. So I think those days, glory days, are behind me.
Maybe not fight, but at least like, you know, train, like just training and getting in shape is always cool. But man, it's hard too. Like if you always stayed in training, maybe that would have took your time away from doing some other stuff, which has definitely made you successful, like as successful as you are right now. So like, you know, it's all a trade, like where you want to put your time. You seem like you have a lot of shit on your plate. Like I said, I watched your video. You have 14 different streams of revenue. Like that's a lot of work, man. Like you do a lot of work. So that's, you know, it's incredible. It's inspiring too. Cause like I watching a lot of your vids and trying to get ideas as well. And think like what I can do, because I want to emulate like kind of what you're doing as well.
Yeah I mean it all started with that first stream of income. Was I wrote a book and put it on Kindle, and I did it while living at the Muay Thai gym.
When did you release that book? Was it 2013?
Because
it wasn't that long after we all, like, after 2011. I remember, yeah, it was before I was in the UFC. I'm trying to remember, and just kind of, I get punched in the head, so I'm like, my memory's always like shoddy.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember like that's what started it all. Like it was after like my sixth fight or something, that was my last fight. I remember I got so beat up in that fight. I got elbowed like 6 times in the face, broke my nose, and I think I, you know, like little fractures in my foot, and I was just like, I felt so bad after. I was like, you know what, I'm done. Like I gave it a shot, I enjoyed it, but. You know, I'm never gonna be GoPro, and I was thinking like, I gotta figure out another way to make money. You know, I can't train anymore because, you know, at least for a few weeks while my body's healing up, and I don't know if I want to go back to, you know, to doing this full time. And that's when I decided, you know what, I'm sitting across the street from the gym. I can hear them get up every morning at, you know, 6 or 7 a.m. You know, starting pads. So I'm up. I'm excited. But I can't train. What else can I do? So I sat right in front of that window watching them train while writing that book.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, no, it's huge. Like, man, because yeah, would you say, yeah, definitely that probably that one little decision probably changed your life.
Yeah, because awesome. I remember, like, even though it didn't make a ton of money, it was making like $200 a month for years. And it's called 12 Weeks in Thailand, The Good Life on the Cheap, if anyone wants to check it out, it's on Amazon. But $200 a month was like almost enough to like, you know, to like get me by, you know, like it was like enough to either like pay for my food or my rent, because I was living super cheaply in Thailand anyways. I mean, my rent was $200. So, you know, I figured if the book can cover my entire rent, all I got to do is start something else on the side and, you know, try to cover the rest.
Yeah, like people don't realize how much $200 is in Southeast Asia. Like me and my wife and my kids live in a really nice house, and I only pay $250 a month. Our utility bill is never over $100 a month. And like we live in a nice place and a lot of room. Like we have four bedrooms, got two bathrooms. It's like it's two floors. Like especially it's nice because I have a Thai wife, so she can talk in Thai and get these things done, you know, like and negotiate. Because as a foreigner, I'd probably have to pay double that if I was the one who negotiated with the landlord. But still, it's like find the right place to live, and you know if you can live simple, you can really stretch your money. Yeah, $200 is a big deal in Southeast.
Yeah, and I remember thinking like, man, this is like true, like pure, like truly passive income. Because you know, it took me a long time to write the book, but once it was done. You know.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I had to write another one every month.
And that book, like $200 a month, that's one Muay Thai fight a month. You know, like that's the way I look at it. Like, yeah, that's better than fighting. You know? And like you said, passive income. So that's huge, right? It's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, book by Will the Kill Chope coming soon.
Yeah, eventually. I've been saying it. Like, what's funny is I was like, I have 120 pro fights now, and I said when I hit my first 100, I was going to write a book about like the first 100. But yeah. I don't think I'm going to write a book about the first 100. Eventually I want to have like a tell all story. I want to call it fucking and fighting, you know, and write a fucking kind of I want to say a little bit of rated R about all my stories across the years, all across Asia, and just what I've been doing and all the like the fights. The after parties, the craziness, the mafia. There's a lot of mafia and like gangsters in this business, and just tell a lot of the stories. And so eventually that book will be coming, guys. Fucking and fighting.
I like it. I look forward to that. Hi, bro. Dude, it was so good catching up again.
Yeah, man. It was great, man. Yo, hopefully one of these days we'll be able to cross paths again, whether it's in Thailand, Sri Lanka. Yeah, we'll definitely be able to cross paths again.
Yeah, and I'll keep an eye out for the next UFC. Hopefully, you'll be on the card in the next few months. We'll see.
Well, I'm hoping hopefully this time next year, I'm back in the UFC. That's the plan, I think. This time next year, I'm going to give myself a year. But I think it's realistic.
Yeah, I think it is too. So, dude, good job. Try not to go too crazy in quarantine. How many days do you have left?
I'm literally over the halfway mark now. I got 6 days left or 6 nights left. So, yeah, I'm over that hump.
All right. If anyone wants to check out those videos, if you're watching on, you know, kind of like right when this comes out, you can find Will's Instagram, or if not, it'll be on his YouTube channel. What are the links to that?
Just go at Asia Will the Kill for Instagram or Twitter. And then if you just type in Will Chope, you should be able to find my YouTube account. And appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll link all that in the show notes below. Yeah, if Will's ever fighting, you know, in your country where you're at, go watch him. Entertaining fighter. Do you still go by Lanky Madness, or has that graduated since you?
It's always Will the Kill, but like people that like know me what's up.
Oh, I love it. I'm honored.
Hell yeah.
All right, bro. Good talking to you. Hopefully I'll see you soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you, bro.
Thank you for listening to the Travel Like a Boss podcast. If you want to hear more, including the bonus How to Choose the Perfect Niche episode, join our mailing list at travellikeabosspodcast.com. See you next week, and remember, if you want to travel like a boss, you need to be your own boss. So start your online business today and start living the lifestyle you've always dreamed of.